Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. It's Bill Bartholomew here with you for new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. Today, we welcome in a Rhode Island broadcasting legend, the one and only Frank Carpano of NBC 10. And of course, Frank has been a sportscaster on Channel 10 for decades. And look, he's a household name, somebody who's been a big part of Channel 10's dominance over the last several decades, just somebody who's been in a whole lot of living rooms through the television and now other platforms. And what's fascinating is that he still has the energy, he's still going strong, and we get into a really interesting conversation about the future of media, both on the local level and zooming out into like the global level. And he has a really interesting take on where television, radio, and traditional media fit into kind of the puzzle that includes social media, podcasting, whatever, the new media world. So great stuff today. A real pleasure and an honor even to have Frank Carpano here on B-Town. And always an honor to have you along as well. Appreciate all of your support out there. You can send me an email anytime, bill@ripodcast.com, or go ahead and tweet at me at Bill Bartholomew. It means a lot to hear from a lot of you throughout the week, whether you have a question about something that's going on, you're commenting on a story, you're reaching out with a story idea, whatever it may be, keep the emails coming. It's great to hear from you, and I am truly appreciative of all of your support out there. We have seen enormous growth just here in season 4 since January. And a lot of that, you know what that is? That's word of mouth. I don't spend money on advertising or any of that nonsense. You know, there's no spamming or anything like that. It's all because of you out there. And I really appreciate it. Just spreading the word, talking about the show, sharing episodes on social media. It's been growing organically. And that is probably the thing I'm most proud of, is that grassroots element to B-Town. All right, let's get into it today. This is a fun episode. Somebody that I grew up watching, and I'm sure many, many of you also grew up watching. Maybe he even covered your high school field hockey game or something like that. The one, the only, Frank Carpano, here on B-Town, Rhode Island's podcast of record. All right, so Frank Carpano, ladies and gentlemen, and an absolute legend of television, of sports here in Rhode Island. Thanks so much for hopping on. Appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Nice to be with you. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, of course. It was, you know, it's interesting because you're so ubiquitous with Channel 10, with television, with sports in Rhode Island. And, you know, I remember being at the Duncan Doyle, then the Providence Civic Center, and realizing, oh, wow, you're also the voice, the PA voice of the Providence Friars when I was like 12 years old or whatever, and being like, how do you do that? How do you run around? How can you have multiple jobs? And you've been able to just find a way to just be a part of so many people's lives in Rhode Island and Southern New England for so long. So I guess, what's that experience like?
Well, that's probably the most fun part of the job. People ask me, you know, what over my 41 years at NBC 10, what is the coolest thing or the best thing you've done? And granted, there's been, the Super Bowls and the World Series and the Olympics and stuff. But, you know, the one local story or a couple local stories that kind of jump out at me. One is back in 1996, the Cranston Western Little League team went to the Little League World Series in Williamsport.
Yep.
And I followed them there and got to know the parents, and they won the U.S. championship, which no Rhode Island team had done before. And it was just such a great experience with those kids who are now probably in their 30s. And then the other one was Elizabeth Beisel, who I interviewed as an 8-year-old when she was 8 years old. And I thought, I had a daughter who was younger, but I'm like, I had heard about this young girl who was an unbelievable swimmer, was a concert pianist and did great in school. And I said, I had to meet this girl. So I did. And I met the most outgoing, bubbly young lady at 8 years old that I've ever met. And don't you know that years later, she becomes an Olympic swimmer and wins Olympic medals. So, you know, it's stories like that where you get to see, you know, young kids and their parents together in those types of situations that is really rewarding.
And youth sports, high school sports, even obviously college with URI, with Providence College, and now Bryant and Brown also making their way into that conversation. But it's such an important part of Rhode Island culture. It's embedded in what it means to be Rhode Island to a certain extent.
Absolutely. And it's funny because those people tend to pop up, you know, also every so often. For example, last week we were doing a story about the Henrikin and Mount St. Charles hockey teams and how they, because of COVID, weren't able to finish their hockey series. So talking to the coaches and Matt Merton, who is the head coach for Mount St. Charles, once interned for me back in the 1980s when he played hockey at Providence College. So there's all sorts of connections like that. And as we know, there's no such thing as 6 degrees of separation in the state of Rhode Island.
Yeah, definitely not. And it is what a challenging year for sports in general, and particularly for sports broadcasting. I mean, we've seen ratings take a hit on actual national telecasts. We've seen talk radio kind of get into a position where, especially in the thick of COVID, what do you talk about? Where do you go? You know, I remember Joe Chiatta doing, you know, people shooting Nerf basketballs into dumpsters or something like that. That was the 6 o'clock sports report on the weekends. But how has this year been for you trying to pivot and cover sports when sports were paused or are so limited in scope compared to the other 41 years of your career?
Well, 1 year ago, this coming Thursday, I was in New York covering the Big East tournament.
Yeah.
And at halftime of a game that preceded the Providence College game later that afternoon, they pulled the plug. They said, that's it. You know, because of this COVID thing, we're pulling the plug on the entire tournament. And so, you know, we'd heard a little bit about COVID at that point, and my photographer and I, Scott Santos, we went outside in front of Madison Square Garden to do a live shot. And I remember seeing people walk by with masks on. And I remember thinking, geez, you know, that's really kind of over the top that people are wearing masks. And here we are a year later, we're all wearing masks. But, you know, the year people always asked me, and certainly in the thick of it last spring, you know, what are you covering? There was always plenty of sports news. What there wasn't were sports games. So, you know, as the NHL playoffs and the NBA playoffs and then a shortened baseball season returned, you know, we got that back. But there was always sports news to cover, Bill.
I remember distinctly when I looked up I was in Newport performing a gig on a Wednesday night, and I looked up and saw on the television screen, NBA suspends and cancels season. And it was kind of like, okay, this is real. You know, for that type of financial bath to take place, you know that this is just the beginning of. And then shortly thereafter, the Big East, as you mentioned, the whole NCAA tournament, and you just realize, wow, this is unprecedented.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I have friends who own restaurants, and they had the plug pulled on their business, and they said, well, we're going to be out for a couple of weeks. Well, it ended up being much more than that. But, you know, it's interesting that you should mention music. People say, well, what do you miss most? I miss the games. But the other thing that I really miss, and I can't wait till we get back, is music. Yeah. I love going out to listen to live music bands in Rhode Island, and there's so many great ones. And that hasn't gotten back yet. And that's one thing that I'm really, truly looking forward to.
Yeah, hopefully this summer with the outdoor options, that's something that could be considered at minimum. But I guess kind of looking at the whole scope of your career, your role, you know, I can still picture that old Channel 10, 6 o'clock open, boom, here's Doug White, you know, Ginger Casey, of course, but then, of course, Patrice, Gary Lay, Frank Carpano, the four of you, you know, that's hello, Rhode Island. We're coming into your living room and you're going to be with us until Brokaw and then dinner. You know, that was everybody's life for so long. And obviously it's changed. Obviously the dynamics of media have changed, but somehow the 6 o'clock news, the 11 o'clock news sportscast is still a relevant space and is still an important space, both locally and covering international sports, if relevant in that moment. So what's that like, navigating that?
Well, and plus, you know, around those shows that you mentioned, the 6 and 11, we've built a lot more news programs.
Yeah,
I can remember when I first started, the lead into the 6 o'clock news was Star Trek. So, you know, and we didn't have a morning news. So now We start at 4:30 in the morning on NBC 10, 4:30 to 7, and then the Today Show. And then we come back on at 5 o'clock and we do an hour and a half until 6:30. And we come back on at 7 o'clock and do a half hour. And then we do another half hour at 10 o'clock on MeTV, which is our sister station. And then we do another half hour at 11 o'clock. So there's a lot more news to go around and a lot more time for us to tell our stories.
What's the best part of being in a position where you're a Rhode Island icon or your household name? And what's the most difficult part of that?
First of all, I don't think of myself that way.
yeah.
You know, it's nice to be recognized. I will say that it's nice because it's validation of the work that you're doing. And, you know, to have somebody come up to me and say, "Hey, you covered me when I was in high school." And now I get, kids that come up and with their dads and their dads say that, you know, now you're covering my son after you covered me when I played high school football. That I really get a kick out of that. So that's really nice, you know, to have been in one place for so long and to be able to have a foot in the community and to be able to see these young kids come up through, you know, youth sports and then high school sports. And if they're lucky enough to continue, you know, in the college ranks and the few who are that good that they can go on to the professional ranks is really a nice thing. You know, one guy that kind of pops to mind is Rocco Baldelli. We started, sure, you know, following him when he played at Henrichen, and then, you know, he goes and he has a professional career that's cut short by a health issue. And now he's the manager of the Minnesota Twins and still the nicest guy that you'd ever want to meet.
So Woonsocket Rocket.
Excuse me?
The Woonsocket Rocket.
Woonsocket Rocket. He's just, you know, and those are the type of stories and the type of people that you meet that really, you know, warm your heart and make it feel worthwhile what you're doing.
Yeah. What's your own personal background in sports?
Well, the reason why you never saw me in Major League Baseball or any sport is I couldn't play, but I always wanted to go. I always wanted to see it. So, you know, I was never, you know, really good enough. I played some tournament tennis right through, you know, college and stuff, and was decent. But other than that, you know, I tried them all, but I really didn't have the aptitude. So the next best thing is to go and to cover the sports. And I started that actually when I was in high school. I worked at a local radio station in Framingham. Then I went to Ithaca College, got a communications degree there, came back to the radio thing in Framingham, and then got my first TV job in Worcester. So I did both those jobs, and I was there a short time in Worcester when Channel 10 called, and I worked a year part-time. So I was working all three jobs, basically 6 or 7 days a week, which is what you do when you're young and you want to get into the business.
Yep.
And then fortunately, the person who was the number two person behind Chris Clark back in the early 80s, Joe Zone, left, and I got bumped up to that full-time position. And then eventually, when Chris Clark left, then I was bumped up to the main position, and that's where I've been ever since.
All right, folks, this is getting real. The time for talk is over. From iron workers to engineers, business owners to biology teachers, Rhode Islanders believe in the power of offshore wind. Together, we're cleaning the air and creating jobs right here at home. Our goal of 100% renewables by 2030 is in sight. And the future is bright with Rhode Island, a real leader in America's emerging offshore wind industry. So what makes you a Revolution Wind believer? Join us at revolution-wind.com/it's real. That's revolution-wind.com/it's real. Let's go. You know, boy, you've had quite a slew of cohorts. You know, Joe Rocco, yep. Someone I had as a college professor, Tim Gray. Then Keith Russell, of course. I mean, doing the rhymes and everything on the news, and now Joe Caiata for quite some time now. But you've built a space in the market where Channel 10 Sports is a thing. It's not just about you or that, you know, 4 minutes of news segment, if you will, that 4 minute news segment. It's a brand in and of itself. And you have I've been inside your building at one point. I saw your office. You know, there's basketball laying around or whatever it is, but it's got a great feel to this community.
Yeah. You know, we're very fortunate that we get the leeway to cover the things that we want. you know, one name that you missed, and maybe you weren't even aware, Jack Edwards, who is for the Bruins, worked with us for a couple of years in the early 1980s. So it's been quite a stable of some very talented and very nice people. But yeah, you know, the companies that we've worked for have given us the leeway to be able to cover sports the way we want to cover sports. And that's really been a blessing, because I don't know that every station can say that about their coverage and sports commitment.
What's your take on radio versus television, having experience in both of them? Sometimes I've heard people say, look, radio is more fun, you get more time, but television, you pay the bills and you get more exposure as a persona. What's your take on that?
Well, first of all, I came up through radio, and I, back in the 80s, when young people who wanted to get into the business asked me how, I told them the way I did it. And I always thought that was the best way, because, you're just worried about your writing, which is always very important on any level, and, how you sounded and how you delivered your story. And then, when you graduate to television, then you worry about how you look, and you kind of mesh the both two of them together. Now that doesn't happen anymore. These kids are coming out of school with incredible experience and incredible resume reels. And, not a lot of people make their first stop in radio. Although, there have been people in Providence now who, have graduated from the likes of WPRO doing news there, into television jobs in the market. So, it still does happen that way with newspaper people and with radio people. But in terms of having more time, sometimes I do envy the radio guys that have, hours on top of hours to be able to talk sports. And we're, trying to carve out our own niche where we do have a little bit more than usual time to be able to express some views. And that may be something that's coming up down the road, because, right now when you think about it, do you know how long our sports segment is? I'll ask you. How long
I would guess 180 seconds.
So we do like 3 minutes to 4 minutes. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
And we put a lot into that. And people always tease me about, hey, you work 3 minutes a night.
Right. Yeah.
little do they know all that goes into it. My day, here we are just after noontime, and my day started early this morning working on a couple of stories, and we'll continue through the evening. So, but you know what, Bill, I'm sure you can attest to this. If you're doing something that you love, then it's really not work. I think about it and people go, wow, 41 years, when are you going to retire? And I'm like, I love what I do. It's definitely my job, but it's also my hobby. I've been so fortunate to be able to do it, and do it during a period of time where the local teams have been so successful, the Bruins, Celtics, Red Sox, and Patriots that we cover as our own, right down to the college basketball teams and, the P Bruins and the Pawtucket Red Sox. So, and the youth teams that, it's been really rich with championships that, I don't think that it would have been, as I look back, as satisfying a career if I didn't have those things to cover.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt the cause. I mean, and even with in college hoops here, we've had glimmers of, certainly in the 90s, we had back-to-back years of extreme excitement with respect to the men's tournament. But, you think about the Jim Barron era of URI hoops, there were some NIT appearances, but great games, great matchups that against the Phil Martelli St. Joe's teams. I mean, those were big time games happening in Kingston, Rhode Island. So even in years that were championship wise lean, there's still a magnet for great sports taking place in Rhode Island. The platforms are there for it.
Well, and the thing that keeps us in business are the passionate fans. URI fans are extremely passionate about their team, as are Providence College fans, and maybe to a lesser extent Brown University and Bryant University fans. I love that. Whether they think that we should do more coverage of their team or not, sometimes they get on us, and I'm like, And people say, doesn't that bother you? No, it doesn't bother me. I love it because those are the people that keep us in business. You know, it's what being a fan is all about. And I wish I had more time, you know, most nights to be able to tell more of their stories.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, a digital sports program could work really well in Rhode Island. I'll say that, you know, with a trusted voice. And Kevin Mack's doing a good job with his stuff and that his new show on WPRO. But that's, there's room for more of that. People care enough. People are passionate. You could probably do a URI show in and of itself. I don't know, nightly, but certainly weekly. There's enough content where people really do care here in a way that it's compelling. That certainly, having lived in New York for a decade and listening to WFAN almost nonstop, particularly Francesa, you know, college sports didn't quite resonate there. You could have a great season for St. John's and no one really cares. Rutgers football is ranked. No one really cares. You know, it's, but here it does trickle down to college and even high school. And certainly the independents like Elizabeth Beisel, that you go, wow, people, this is a part of the culture of the state just as much as anything else.
Well, when you mentioned that, you know, college takes a backseat in New York, the same can be said in Boston. You know, Boston, yep, College has a good year. You don't really hear people calling into the sports radio stations in Boston and talking about it. So, you know, we always joke that, you know, our college teams are kind of like our professional teams here. Yep. I mean, when the PC and URI are going good, you know, you've got 7,000 people at the Ryan Center at URI. You've got 12,000 plus at the Dunkin' Donuts Center to watch PC games. You know, that's pretty impressive. I don't even think that, in Boston, for example, Boston College, if they had a really good team, I'm not sure that they're blowing up, you know, the Conti Forum there. So, you know, it's I think people, you know, enjoy the local sports here, and it's certainly different than pro sports, you know. But I love the enthusiasm. That's something that I've really missed. You know, doing the PA for PC this year, we were doing it up on campus at Alumni Hall, and there are no fans.
Yeah,
and it just, you know, you're missing that energy. And not only, you know, for the home games, but on the road. And I had said to Coach Cooley, I said, you know, that's almost like the sixth man, be it for better or for worse, you know, where you're lighting a little fire on the kids. You know, if things are a little slow, you know, a crowd can get behind you and they can help, you know, pull you through the tough spots. By the same token, if you're on the road and people are getting on you, you know, that helps intensify your focus in a game if things aren't going well and might propel you to the win. So, you know, that's the great thing about sports is the passion of the fans, in addition to the, you know, to the great play on the fields.
Who are some of the great characters that have come through Rhode Island sports? Some of your favorite people, whether they're known or unknown?
Characters. Well, Vinny Paz, boxer.
Sure. Yeah.
He might be right there, you know, for the top of the character list. You know, it was kind of cool. I was his ring announcer for about 20 of his fights during his heyday. The first time they asked me was prior to his first fight at the Civic Center. And they asked me to do it. And I'm like, okay, I mean, how many people are they going to get there? You know, how many?
Yeah.
This Joe Frazier Jr., who's fighting back in, I think it was 86. And he said, oh, no, we're going to sell at the Civic Center. I'm like, yeah, okay. Son of a gun, if Jimmy Birchfield, the local promoter, and Angelo Pazienza, Vinny's dad, don't knock on every door and sell tickets. And that night, there was no television coverage, and the place was busting out with people. And there was a lot of people with suit coats and ties who probably left right after work, went and got a bite to eat, and came in to see what this guy Vinny Paz was all about. And that was kind of the start of it, how, you know, he just, you know, kind of propelled himself onto the national scene. Who else? Bill Lee, the spaceman from the Red Sox, gotten to know him. He is one incredible character. Those two are probably near the top of my list, but that's a good question. I would stick with those guys as over the course of 41 years who are pretty big characters. A lot of great personalities. You know, Coach Cooley at PC is quite a character and a great personality, good person to deal with. You know, the intensity of someone like Rick Pitino when he came through here, that was really something. So, you know, we've had our share of those types of people. Ed Noddle, when he was the manager of the Pawtucket Red Sox, he was a character. You know, on off nights, you'd see him singing in local bars. So,
yeah.
Yeah, he was a pretty good guy. So yeah, that would, you know, just a quick, you know, off the top of my head, those are the names that come to mind.
With your experience inside the television news sector, so to speak, the local news sector, where does the industry go from here? Where do you pivot to expand to new audiences, just to kind of adapt? I mean, you are obviously turn210.com. That's a thing. There's digital presence. You've got multiple outlets. It's not as if that's not happening, but there are some people who make the argument that, and I actually have no idea if this is true or not, but that local television, that talk radio, that the formats are in danger of 10, 20 years from now collapsing. What do you say about that?
That I don't know. I'm of a mind that, you know, when it comes to things like, you know, Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff, that those platforms are great to promote your main product, which is on the big stick, which is on NBC 10. You know, I don't think we make any money on Twitter. We don't make any money on Facebook, but what we do make money on is on NBC 10 and turn210.com. And, you know, a lot of our efforts, you know, have gone to that. And, you know, and I'm sure that our people are looking, you know, how can we make money on different platforms? You know, with NBC 10 app, I'm sure is another revenue generator. You know, I think that there will always be, you know, local news. And I think that, you know, where you'll be able to find it, there'll probably be many more ways to find it, but I think you'll always be able to find it on TV because I think there will always be TV. And, you know, you look now at NBC just started the Peacock and they're putting a lot of material there. And I could see a local station doing that as well. But you know, right now the goose that still lays the golden egg is the TV station.
Yeah, it's so true. And a lot of people, there's this notion that digital media is coming in to replace traditional media. And I find, and obviously I'm certainly not an expert. I'm new, relatively new in all of this, but there is no question the podcast here, this reaches a lot of people, it reaches a certain amount of people. A Facebook post reaches certain people, but talk radio, WPRO, or a piece that may come out on Rhode Island PBS, that reaches a lot of people as well. So it may just be that more people find their preferences or just consume more stuff as well, including the traditional platforms, that it's not simply that it's going to be replaced. And I think that's where I hope anyway, that's where things go, where it's not, well, I don't listen to, you know, I never listen to the radio anymore. I only listen to podcasts. So, well, it might be people have a balance of how they do things and they just have more control of their specific preferences.
Well, I'm thinking here, I want to take you a little history lesson here. And some of this you may remember during your lifetime and maybe other ways not. Back when, and this was before my time, but back when FM became a big thing, because radio started just as AM. FM sounded so much clearer and everything, people said, it's the end of AM radio. Well, it's not the end of AM radio. Here we are, you know, 50, 60 years later. And then when DVD players came out and people could watch movies at home, people said, it's the end of the movie theaters. No, yeah. Nobody's going to go to the movie theaters anymore. Well, fact of the matter is, you know, the pandemic obviously has changed that a little bit. People are still going to the movie theaters because you cannot replace that experience. So, you know, AM radio has cut out its own little niche. Music station, probably not so much, but, you know, it's cut out its niche as, you know, talk. That's primarily where you can find talk. And you're still going to a movie theater because I can try and, you know, replicate it in my house with surround sound and a big screen and everything, but it's not the same experience as actually being in a movie theater. Would you agree?
Oh, 100%. And the same for music, the same for, it's interesting is as a musical artist, the idea of Spotify and everything taking over, which is, there is a convenience to it and you have so much more access, but there's something about back in when I was in middle school, getting dropped off at Newbury Comics and having to decide which CD do I want to get, which artist do I want to get, and then holding it in your hand and experiencing reading the lyrics. that experience is, you can't match that in the digital space. So I wonder if the physical music world is going to come back at some point where people are going to say, hey, look, I want that experience of making a choice and living with it in a way that you just don't get if you're listening to a Spotify playlist that somebody else created for you.
Well, and we'll use this as an example too. You know, when you could use a CD to play music, and as great as that sounded, you know, that kind of spelled the end of vinyl records. But now vinyl records are making a comeback. So yeah. For you know, a true aficionado who can really tell the difference, people are going back to that. And to what extent, I'm not sure. And are you someone who can kind of tell the difference, you know, between music on a CD versus on vinyl?
Absolutely. No question about it. And it's a different experience too, because then you open up that package and you place it on the record player and you're watching it move around and it's got a different fidelity. That's a different experience than just saying, oh, let me put some music on and get some work done.
Right. Right. So all that said, you know, I think that television will survive, you know, with as the platforms and the ways to consume video expands. I think it, you know, it's here to stay. Fingers crossed, he said.
Last question. So I go back here on this one, 1999, you were holding, I think it was 99, may have been 98. You were holding, you were doing a television, a feature series on this, a weekly feature series, Rhode Island's Most Difficult Golf Hole. And I wrote to you about the eighth hole at the now defunct Lynbrook Golf Club. And you had written back and said, hey, look, let's try to make this happen. It never happened. Do you think you'll ever do that series again? And if so, can I be a part of it?
Now, Lynbrook is where?
Well, it was in Hopkinton, Rhode Island. It was an all par three course. It's where I learned golf, at like a summer camp type thing. Right when Tiger Woods emerged, I became obsessed with golf. And it was a beautiful course. And then it was purchased by Foxwoods. They got Boulder Hill and Lynbrook simultaneously. Somewhere in the last 15 years, it went away. And I drove by there last summer and saw it was all overgrown. And now it's Buttonhole is where you go if you want to play par three. But it's fascinating to think about golf in Rhode Island and just what a beautiful golf world we have, how many courses there are, how much variety there is here, and how you can lose a course that so many people loved and it still doesn't impact necessarily the bottom line of the whole sport here.
Yeah. You know, it is kind of sad to hear that story. And, you know, I used to have a restaurant over in Seekonk where Firefly Golf Course is, and that golf course isn't what it was. I'm not even sure it's still open as a golf course. And Metacomet is another one that, you know, people are going to be developing for something other than golf. Yeah. You know, and Valley Country Club in Warwick, is another one that is probably headed in that direction. It's sad because there are so many beautiful golf courses in Rhode Island that it's a shame that things like that, especially a place like Metacomet, which is it's got such historical value, that is going away.
Yeah, I'm lucky I got to play it. I was on my high school team. And by the way, especially back then, it was a terrible golfer. You know, I've gotten it together a little bit during COVID. I went and played Buttonhole like 4 days a week. So at least my short game's on fire now. But I'm lucky as a high school golfer, I got to play a lot of these great courses, including Metacomet. So as that story's been developing and no pun intended, and the developments being proposed, you know, I can think back to, wow, that's a magical space. And people have a real misconception about golf. They see it as it is expensive to play a lot of places, no doubt about it. But that it's somehow this waspy, you know, elite sport, you know, type of thing. And to me, my experience was it was a really inclusive sport. And I played with people of all stripes and all backgrounds and still do. And it's such a magical experience that to lose a place like Metacomet, I mean, that's sad commentary on the state of the world.
It is. And I just hope that there are no others that are headed in the same direction.
Yeah. Last question here. You say you're not interested in retiring, which, hey, why not? Why would you if you're enjoying what you're doing? But what do you want your legacy to be when it's all said and done? When people think about Frank Carpano and they think about the slot that you created and the dominance that you've had in terms of on television. No disrespect to your competitors who do a good job. They do a fine job at times, but Channel 10's Sports Report, that's the place to be. What do you want the legacy to be?
Well, you know what? I haven't really thought about it because, you know, I'm certainly closer to the finish than I am to the beginning, but I really haven't thought about that. I think that's something that you think about, you know, when you're sitting out on the 19th hole after a round.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed doing stories about, you know, Rhode Islanders, Southern New Englanders, and covering the biggest stories, you know, the Super Bowls and the World Series and the Olympics and getting to know people. It's in Rhode Island. It really has been a great work-life balance being a sportscaster at Channel 10, and the relationships that I've built, you know, inside and outside of the station are things that, you know, I have just been so fortunate to have in my life that bottom line is I'm just one lucky guy.
Rhode Island's podcast of record, B-Town. At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.